7:01 on a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff in the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of this program. Hour two is going to be kicked off with Daniel Kaplan, sports business writer from The Athletic. He's going to join us in just a second here. Before we get to Daniel, I need to tell you that hour two is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. Before we get to Daniel, Jason is going to tell you about Kintec.
We're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net.
He is a sports business writer for The Athletic. He joins us now, Daniel Kaplan, here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Daniel. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We appreciate you taking the time. I'm going to put you to work right away. I'm going to get you to explain this really big, really complex story, not just to me and Jason, but to our listeners as well. Can you explain the situation at hand between Diamond Sports Group and Bally Sports, their media contracts, and the numerous MLB teams that are now facing an uncertain future with their broadcast rights?
Oh, gosh. Do you have a couple of hours?
We do. Two, as a matter of fact.
Well, your listeners probably know the parent company of Bally Sports Regional Networks, Diamond Sports Group, which is ultimately owned by Sinclair, declared bankruptcy in March. This was a result of a lot of debt taken on by Sinclair when it acquired the regional sports channels in 2019, and also because of the tremendous cord cutting that's gone on in the cable industry over the last couple of years, reducing the number of paying subscribers that Diamond Sports Group was counting on. They broadcast, well, until the Padres left this week, they broadcast 14 Major League Baseball teams' games. And so they're down to 13. And the concern was that the Diamond Sports Group would walk away from the contracts, which they did with the Padres. But what they chose with four of them was to say under bankruptcy law, they can decide not to pay the contracts and pay the fees due in the contracts and continue to broadcast the games. And so for the last 2 months in bankruptcy court, Major League Baseball has been fighting this in the four teams, the Minnesota Twins, the Cleveland Guardians, the Texas Rangers, and I'm blanking on the Arizona Diamondbacks, have been fighting this. And yesterday, the bankruptcy judge, after months and these 2 months of briefings and motions and the marathon hearings, decided that Diamond Sports Group could not do this and ordered Diamond Sports Group to actually pay the four teams what is owed under the contract. So that's a long way of saying Major League Baseball got a big victory yesterday.
Can they afford to pay those contracts?
They actually said they could afford to pay the contracts, but what it will force them to do now is decide whether they're going to reject or assume the contracts. And what that means in bankruptcy law is once a company files for bankruptcy, they have a certain period of time in which they have to decide whether they're going to keep a contract and pay under its terms or just reject it outright and walk away from it. And that's what they did with the Padres. Because the Padres have a joint venture with the regional sports channel with Bally's, they do not fall under the bankruptcy the way these other 13 teams have. So the four teams that were not being paid did not have the option of walking away. They had to take it through the bankruptcy court. So it was a big victory for them to win. Diamond Sports Group says they have the money, and we'll see if that is indeed the case. But the pressure on them to reject or assume these contracts, meaning whether to keep them or walk away from them, that will heighten now that the decision from the judge fell in Major League Baseball's favor yesterday.
How frustrated is Major League Baseball that this company took on so much debt, didn't see the cord cutting coming, and now they're in this position?
Well, that's the undercurrent of all of this, is the disfavor that the two sides hold each other in. And the Commissioner Rob Manfred testified during the 2 days of hearings, and he actually told an anecdote in which he accused the chairman of Sinclair of coming to his office in New York and essentially trying to blackmail Major League Baseball into handing over what are called the direct-to-consumer rights. These are the rights to stream the games directly to the consumer, like a la Netflix. And it's been no secret that Sinclair Diamond Sports Group has wanted these direct-to-consumer rights to pair them with the traditional TV rights and sell them as a package. And baseball doesn't want to do that. They don't trust Sinclair Diamond Sports Group, and they want to, you know, they've had success with their MLB.TV package, which is the out-of-market games, and they want to do something similar with in-market games. And so there's been this tension between Major League Baseball and Sinclair, and it really just exploded into the open during these 2 days of hearings.
So why should the casual fan care about all this?
Well, there was the concern that to the casual fan that if, for example, Diamond Sports Group walked away from its contract obligation, the games wouldn't be broadcast. But baseball has put together behind the scenes a local broadcast operation. They've staffed out a local broadcast group. In the case of the Padres, they were ready to step in. And in fact, there'll be more exposure for the teams because it's not just the traditional cable platforms. They can have the direct-to-consumer platform too, as they will with the Padres. The concern is that Sinclair Diamond Sports Group was paying a hefty fee because a lot of these contracts were negotiated before cord-cutting became a fast-growing phenomenon. And the concern is Major League Baseball, as they take over a team like the Padres, won't be able to keep up with those fees. In fact, they've guaranteed that the Padres will be paid 80%, at least 80% of what they were due under Diamond's contract. But that's just for this first interim year. So going forward, the Padres may not have as much money, at least in the short term, as they would have under the Diamond deal. But this is something, as cord cutting has destroyed the traditional cable universe, something we're going to see a lot more of. And everyone from ESPN to Diamond Sports is trying to bridge this environment of the traditional cable universe imploding with the future of digital streaming, mm-hmm. which, while is convenient, doesn't pay as much as the traditional cable bundle.
We're speaking with
pay to the teams.
Right. We're speaking with Daniel Kaplan, sports business reporter for The Athletic. Let's go from one bankruptcy to another. What's the latest with Evander Kane?
Oh, well, he got some good news recently. His largest creditor, which was suing him within the bankruptcy court, trying to prevent him from walking away from those debts that he had with that entity, Centennial Bank, which was over $8 million. The bankruptcy judge ruled that indeed Kane could walk away from those debts. A little bit of news I got popped in my email, a court alert. Centennial Bank is appealing that decision, so that will continue to fester out there. But chances are that will be an unsuccessful appeal, and Kane will be indeed able to walk away from those debts.
How much debt did he pile up that he's going to ultimately be able to walk away from him?
Well, according to the bankruptcy petition he filed in January of 2021, it was something on the order of $26, $27 million. And to put that in context, he on the same petition declared $10 million of assets. And this is someone who at that point in time had earned contracts paying him roughly $50, $60 million.
Did these creditors know the extent of his gambling? Like, my question is, why did these people keep lending him money?
That's a great question. And, you know, Centennial Bank throughout this process acted like they had one pulled over on them, which is crazy. But the bankruptcy judge in his decision included information that showed quite clearly that Centennial knew that the loans it was making to Kane were to take out existing loans that he had. This is something, I mean, it's really, really unbelievable. Kane, from the period of, I believe, 2014 to 2019, took out 26, 27 loans totaling $50 or $60 million. And they basically were loans to pay off gambling debts and to take out other loans that he had taken to pay off gambling debts. And and high living expenses. Why Centennial Bank didn't know this, they've never said. They acted like they were the innocent party here, but it's hard to understand why Centennial Bank made the loans it made.
Did you get any inclination when you were writing about Evander Kane how much the teams that he was playing for might have known about his gambling? Because when you read the story, the ones that you've written about, just what life must have been like on a day-to-day basis for Evander Kane, it's chaos. Like, he's having these huge gambling days. A lot of the times I imagine he's losing, so he's having to go to these lenders and he's having to take a loan out from these guys, and wait a minute, I can't pay back that loan, so I got to go get another loan from these guys to pay back that loan, but now I owe this money to this guy and I'm still gambling. I mean, it just sounds like absolute chaos, and I just wonder how much the teams knew about this stuff.
Well, I know in the case of the San Jose Sharks, they must have known whether they knew about the gambling or not. The lenders had set up a situation where they were deducting straight from his paycheck, and that had to be done with the knowledge of the San Jose Sharks. But it's a great question. When the NHL investigated allegations that he bet on NHL games that were made by his ex-wife, Anna Kane, they ultimately concluded they didn't have evidence to show that. I mean, they must have come across tons of evidence of the gambling. And it's not just necessarily the gambling. It's who he was gambling with. He was gambling with bookies, with one of the bookies, ended up in federal penitentiary. It was not a good situation. So it's a good question. What did the teams know? But I think we know that when you have a professional athlete who's very good at what he or she does, the teams often look the other way. Evander Kane can put the puck in the net. That's why he continues to play in the NHL. If he was a middling player, I doubt he would be employed by an NHL team, given the issues of gambling.
So Kane is 31 years old now. He's got 3 years left on his contracts, and the contract is going to pay him around $15 million. Is he going to be able to start fresh now? Is he going to be able to keep that money? Or once all this ends, or when could it end, is he going to still have to owe some creditors?
Well, that is what the bankruptcy process gives the individual who files these Chapter 7s, is the ability to start fresh. I mean, I know I get the comments all the time whenever I write about Evander Kane, how can he just walk away from these debts, especially when he has income coming in? And that, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on one's perspective, that's what the U.S. Bankruptcy Code provides, a fresh start. That's the underlying premise of the Bankruptcy Code. So, yes, he should, you know, there's still more going on in the bankruptcy process. As I mentioned, there's an appeal. There's some more litigation ongoing with a woman who accuses him of owing him millions of dollars. So there's still stuff going on. But the way it's been trending, with the judge seeming to be favorable to his perspective, to Kane's perspective, I would expect, yes, he'll be walking away from these debts.
Daniel, thanks for taking the time to join us today and explaining these, well, the first story at least, a pretty complicated business story that we'll keep on monitoring. Enjoy the rest of your day, enjoy your weekend, and thanks for joining us.
All right, thanks for having me.
Daniel Kaplan from The Athletic, sports business writer here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. It is the Halford and Brough Show, and it's a Friday. That can only mean one thing. It's Ask Us Anything Friday here on the program. The premise, in case you're unfamiliar with it, it's quite simple. You ask us something, dare I say anything, and we will do our best to answer it in classic Halbro fashion. Sometimes we'll even include the dogs. We've got a few in so far. A few more. Do you have anything at the ready there, Jason, that we can read on the air?
I thought you had them flagged while I was doing the interview.
I do have some flagged. I thought you might read some while I was setting up the premise of Ask Us Anything. I want to do the genie one. But we're going to have to do, like narrow the scope here. Okay.
Okay.
So the gist of this is you've been granted a wish, a gift, if you will, by a genie, but it's not a really especially good genie. It's like some sort of mid genie. Ergo, your special talent or wish or whatever has to be mid.
It's like the Dr. Nick Riviera of genies.
Yeah, like he's a doctor.
It's
but
more like the Gill of.
You went to upstate medical or general genie school.
Upstairs.
Right. Middle of the night.
Upstairs medical college.
That's
where
it
he
is.
Went. Yeah. The texter then puts in that it would be to increase tread on his tires, like a more durable rubber, so he wouldn't have to go get his tire changed. That's the kind of mid.
That is kind of annoying. I've twice in the last year had to go get a nail removed.
From a tire,
right. And it's like $50. It's $50 that I don't want to spend.
It's an impenetrable tire, unbreakable tire. And that is...
And if you're driving a lot, yeah, their tires are expensive.
And that is an incredibly mid suggestion by our
texter.
You guys brought... What was the one you brought up, Laddie? The ability to sharpen your own skates at any given time?
Yeah, so if there's like a scrambling moment right before a game, you don't have time to get to the pro shop. Mm.
How often do you sharpen your skates?
As a goalie, pretty often.
Really?
You got to keep the edges pretty sharp. You're always hitting the post with your skate, so you're losing the edge. You
got
to go get them sharpened again.
How often do you sharpen your skates?
Not as much as I should.
It used to be back in the day, goalies never sharpened their skates.
Right. Like that's what I thought. Yeah. That's what I thought.
Nowadays, you gotta keep those edges sharp.
A-Dog, do you have a mid wish? I'm bringing mid in again.
Yeah. I'm still working on what Laddie said. I'm like, that'd be like the stupidest superpower ever.
That's kind of the point.
What do you do?
I
could sharpen skates.
Because you got to remember, your answer, we could shoot it down if it's too good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I know I got one. I would wish to always put in the USB cable the right way the first time. I would ask the genie to be like, okay, anytime, anywhere in the world, I need to put in a USB cable.
That is definitely not too big. I wish.
It always goes in right the first... Oh, I'm going to finish that sentence.
Hey, Dog, I have some great news for you. The new UBC, USB that comes out, USB-C, is either way. You can whatever way you put this cord,
so guaranteed that was created by a guy that found a mid genie and wished for that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
yeah.
Give
would,
me your answer.
Would never having to do grocery shopping again, like the fridge is always full, would that
too powerful?
Too powerful.
Yeah. Powerful.
Free food.
Always having food is pretty big.
No, you would pay for it. You'd pay for it. So
just
like,
the shopping part.
The genie would send you a bill. Every month.
They downgraded it.
Yeah. Maybe this is just someone that works for me that does my grocery shopping. I don't know.
Appears in your kitchen. Here's your bill.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that this exists already. There's an app where you can do this. It's like,
yeah, but they won't come into my house and like arrange it in
the fridge. Well,
right?
If you pay them well enough, they will.
Yeah. Like if they'll probably leave a bunch of boxes out and then I've got to do the recycling and I got to stump up the boxes. Like this would work for me. I'm trying to save time here.
You could push the limits of like Uber Eats and see what he does. It's like, cause they have the lingering like tip function. There.
Right.
Like the tip you can. I took an Uber the other day and I got I guess I didn't close the app properly. And 5 days later they were still asking for a tip on the ride home. Because I guess I didn't do that part of the function. Mm-hmm. Right.
You just thought you'd ghost the tip, but
no, I thought I hit send and I didn't. So 5 days later, they're like, we are still waiting on that tip, good sir. I'm like, there you go. I gave him the tip. But that's very odd. Just the tip.
That would be my wish.
What's that?
The genie to always auto make sure the tip has been done so I don't have to worry about it. Everything tip related is finished for me. I don't have to think about tipping.
You cannot,
is that too big?
You can't leave the tip, the amount up to a third party. Because tipping nowadays it's off the charts.
People, it is.
Some vendors are asking for 25% now.
The Starbucks app wants me to tip when I make my order on the app.
I know.
And the guy just hands me the coffee. I mean,
there's
what work is being done?
Come
on, really?
You're literally,
I mean, let's be honest here.
No, I know.
I'm not saying it's easy.
I saw a story about a tipping option being available at grocery stores when you do the self-checkout.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah,
so like you're tipping the corporation.
Exactly. Thank you for providing me a service that I need.
You know, Galen Weston needs it. Is he even in charge anymore? I don't even know if he is. But yeah, just putting it in his
pocket. They're hurting for cash.
Yeah.
I love our listeners because we get Ask Us Anythings like this. Do you guys hate auto flush toilets as much as I do?
I thought about this one.
And Derek, the people translator, my answer to you is probably not as much as you do if you're taking the time to text in a sports radio show about your hate for auto flush toilets.
There's got
to
be a story there.
That's a fair. That's a fair.
You know, they got
response.
Sucked down the toilet.
He lost
once.
A ring,
you know,
or something.
You know those really powerful auto flush toilets where you're kind of like shocked.
Yes, it's like a jet engine.
Yeah. Like,
oh my god.
Yeah, but
running out of the stall. Yeah.
I guess Derek is upset that sometimes it flushes when he leans forward.
Yeah, it happens.
How short is he?
Well, he's leaning forward to do something.
Maybe he really leans into it, right? And then it just flushes.
We need to
by.
Stop with the details at this point.
Anyway, we'll stop with the details of Derek's wiping and/or flushing. But I do not like auto anything in the bathroom.
The auto
I like
auto
flush. I like auto flush. If you stand up and walk away and then it flushes, then I don't have to touch anything.
We as a society need to take responsibility for everything that's done in the washroom. Having it done for us leads to
Do you flush with your foot?
No.
You just put your paw on that thing.
You're about to wash your hands in like
You're
going to
wash your hands anyway. That's...
Oh, I don't wash my hands.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I don't wash
that's,
my hands.
Oh, I should have mentioned that. Yeah. I'm against it.
Yeah. Dangles it in the water just for other people's benefit.
And I let people know. I stare him right in the eyes as I leave. I'm like, I'm not washing.
He licks his fingers like he just had fried chicken.
Don't go that far.
Okay. Has anyone ever had an auto water dispenser while washing their hands or a soap dispenser that does the job adequately?
No.
Ever.
No.
In the history of mankind.
They're the worst.
Yeah,
they're the
that's
worst.
True.
Never.
Yeah.
I know why the auto water ones are there because they want to conserve water. But come on, give us that responsibility. It's up to me to decide how much water I need, not the stupid machine that doesn't even work half the time.
I feel like as a society, we've gotten deep into the hand washing game and we need to be able to regulate, self-regulate a little bit. With regards to how long we want to wash our hands and have the understanding that we need to take the responsibility to turn off the tap or not have the water run for an hour.
And I understand those paper towel ones that give you like the sliver of paper, but I'm just going to stand there for 5 minutes waving my hand until I get a decently long size of paper. It works out in the end for me, but it just takes longer.
If it's free, I'm waiting for all of it. I'll take the entire roll with me, put it in my pocket.
Just give us a long sheet.
That's exactly why it's all automated now, because the people like you that would take the roll with you when you're done, right? Like,
these
companies are like, we're losing too much money.
By the way, is there like the air blade, the Dyson air blade where you stick your hands?
Slight improvement.
It's good, but nothing is ever going to match the paper towel.
The paper towel.
Right?
The paper towel. Where you take like 30 of them, use it a little bit, and then huck it.
Yeah. You make a ball, and especially if you're at a game, right? Yeah. You're like, hey, look, I'm an athlete.
It's good for the economy.
Yeah. But I've yet to find that's
terrible for the environment. Good for the economy.
Yeah. You know, it works both ways. I do wonder if we're ever going to get more technology to where we have something that'll dry our hands adequately. I'm waiting for it. Prove me wrong.
Rich with an Ask Us Anything for Halford.
Okay.
Halford, you need to step up your game. Bruff, that's me, is on an incredible roll at the moment for being told that's a great question. The question for you is there a bit of jealousy creeping in that I'm getting so many great questions, good questions, incredible questions? There have been guests this week that have had to actually, like, their mind was temporarily blown by how great and to the point. Like, I just find that I get to the crux of the issue, the heart of the issue, perhaps a lot better than you do with your long, rambling questions.
I have tried to shorten them up recently. I think, you know what, here's where what I'll say. I am all about the show, the Hal Bro experience. Mm-hmm. It's like two souls together as one. It's not that deep.
Like, I'll be honest with you, if I get many more great questions, we're changing the name of the show to Bruff and Halford.
And then there's Jason's approach to things, which is decidedly different, which is Halford versus Bruff, as opposed to Halford
Actually,
and
that's
Bruff.
What it should be.
That's way better.
Halford versus Bruff in the morning.
Our just basic understandings of how the show should operate is even fundamentally different. I'm like, are we not and? You're like, no, we're versus. This is a competition at all times. But if you watch the live stream, you will acknowledge this and admit it. I am very celebratory whenever you get a great question. I'm back. I'm like, I do the horns.
A-Dog rolls his eyes.
Yeah, I think
rolls his eyes. Like, right at me.
I think
shake
it's great.
My head.
Laddie yawns.
I think it's great. I think it's almost like
he's such a little trooper.
Yeah. I think it's almost like a challenge at this point, and you're meeting the challenge on a near regular basis.
I like this text. Bruff seems like he's got some validation issues.
Oh, have you picked up on that?
Yeah. Tell me I'm good.
What was the hint?
Yeah.
We got an open segment on the other side, so we can do some more Ask Us Anythings. We can also get into some of the news around the sports world. The Stanley Cup Final starts tomorrow. Is anyone?
The what?
Is anyone interested in this? Apparently teams from Vegas and Florida are playing each other. That sounds weird. So we can talk about that. If you want, the BC Lions start their season next week in Calgary. Amar Doman, the owner, is going to join us at 8:30, so hopefully you'll stick around for that. We can do some more Ask Us Anythings. Text them, if you've got any, into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. You're listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.
The most comprehensive Canucks coverage in the city. Canucks Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now for my favorite part of the show. What does that say? Talk to the audience. Oh, God, this is always dead.
On a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program. Hour two is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle. You get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. We had a lot of good Ask Us Anythings come in while we were doing some Ask Us Anythings. And yes, I did flag them. We'll get to some of those in a minute, but we do want to do some sports here on Sportsnet 650, your home of the Canucks and Sports Talk Radio.
So is this going to be our What We Learned segment? I guess it has to be
because Amara is going to
join us at 8:30.
Yes, and this is what we learned.
This is what we learned.
Everything's backwards today.
We'll probably have some time between EJ Raddick and Amara Doman to do a couple, but we may as well get to a bunch of stuff here that we might not otherwise. Okay. Important stuff.
Loose ends.
Well, no, not opposite. Really.
Why don't you make a What We Learned about Brian Burke?
Yeah, Brian Burke is back talking to the media.
So put it in What We Learned terms.
What We Learned. Brian Burke is back talking to the media, specifically podcasts.
Okay. What does he say?
Because he's only been out of a job for a couple.
I learned that Brian Burke wants to or thinks the Leafs should.
Can I just get to it? So he's back. He's now basically able.
Will you eventually?
Yes. He's now able to speak publicly because his job with the Pittsburgh Penguins isn't just over. It's now been filled by Kyle Dubas. He's the new president of Hockey Ops. So yesterday, Brian Burke went out there and decided that he was going to solve what ails the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's going to do that GM job now.
He already failed at that job, though.
I know, but he's trying again. God bless him. he was on Leafs Morning Take with Nick Alberga and Jay Rosehill, a former Toronto Maple Leaf himself. And Brian Burke said he knows how to fix the Toronto Maple Leafs this offseason. Trade William Nylander. For more, here's Brian Burke.
Well, I think it's one thing I can say about this is I can address this because I addressed it in real time. I was working at Sportsnet when it started with Nylander. I said it's too much money. The sequence is wrong. They should have done this in an inverse sequence, an inverse order of signing. They overpaid Nylander. Now they guaranteed Marner be overpaid, guaranteed Austin Matthews be overpaid. So I called it out in real time. In my mind, four guys making $40 million isn't going to work. Even if the cap goes up, it's not going up by more than $1.5 million. It ain't going to work. So it's got to change. And one guy is untradeable. The other two guys are too valuable. I think it's got to be Nylander. Now, in my mind, and by the way, he's become valuable to the point where he's no longer overpaid, in my view. I think he was, but his performance the last 2 years, he's been a solid playoff performer, solid regular season performer, and it's time, I think, to move on and get those assets there and get your cap down.
So Brian Burke apparently does not listen to the Halford and Bruff show on Sportsnet 650, because if he did, he would know that the guy that's going to get traded is Austin Matthews by July 1st. Whatever. Burke can have his own opinion.
I'm confused.
You can be granted the I will grant you my as a mid genie.
Yeah.
Would you like to take back that hot take?
No, I love that hot take. It's fantastic, and it gives me something to talk about for the entire month of June.
But it's dumb now.
It's not dumb.
It is dumb.
It's not dumb
because Brad Treliving has said like our number one goal is to get Austin Matthews signed.
Yeah, but that just means it's his goal. Doesn't mean he's going to achieve his goals. God, look at us. We're just this is the story of not achieving your dreams.
So
right
this
here.
So this is basically how you think it's going to have to play out, right?
I think he's going to talk to Austin Matthews. Austin Matthews going to be like, I don't want to sign long term. And then Brad,
he's going to be like, screw you, Brad. I was in love with Kyle.
He's like, I don't care that you texted me already and opened the lines of communication.
Can you just clarify the Burke comments for me though? Like
what?
He's trying to get the Leafs under the cap and in a better situation.
Yeah.
But his plan is to trade the guy he admits in the clip has been their only real playoff performer and isn't really overpaid with that contract.
Okay, well, one out of the four. We couldn't play the whole conversation, but the premise was like you got to do something to switch it up. What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. So trade the guy who's good in the playoffs.
Yeah, basically.
That's the answer?
Well, because he put it out there. He's like, you can't. Tavares was the untradeable guy.
Tavares is untradeable.
Right? Yeah. And then the other two guys, he just. The logic to Burke, which I disagree with, is that the other two guys are too valuable to trade. That you're
overall, okay. who do you think is a better player? Like, power rank the players, Nylander, Marner, and Matthews.
In terms of?
Just power rank them. I'm asking
Matthews, Lattie. Nylander, Marner would be my.
So you think you think Nylander's a better player than Marner?
When it comes down to playoff time, yeah, I think Marner disappears. He's been terrible.
I have time for that in the playoffs. Yeah. So I think Nylander was the best of the core four in the playoffs.
Marner was like a Selke nominee.
That's what makes it complicated for the Leafs, though, right? Like, Nylander, if he'd had a God, I don't want to say mid again, but let's say he had a below average playoff performance.
Sub-mid
playoff performance. It'd be a lot easier to be like, oh, yeah, he's the obvious guy out the door.
That's true.
Right?
Yep.
But he was the guy that showed up. He was the one scoring the big goals. And even though Austin Matthews is a Hart Trophy winner just last year and Mitch Marner is a Selke finalist this season, you know, Nylander is the guy that showed up. But I understand what Burke's saying. Like, I get it. I don't know if I 100% agree with it, but I kind of get it.
By the way, I got a message for the haters out there. They're like, oh, is this the home of the Canucks or the home of the Toronto Maple Leafs? Folks, this is what it's like when you cover a team that has good players and goes to the playoffs and has stakes involved. When there's actually, like, a price for winning and losing. And they're good and they're competitive and they're intriguing. It's not Rogers and Toronto being shoved down your throats. They're a compelling story because they've got compelling stories, right? There's a reason that no one in Toronto cares if Connor Garland gets traded or not.
Yeah. And the Canucks aren't doing anything.
There's not because they hate Vancouver.
There's a reason that no one in Calgary is concerned about where Brock Besser might play hockey next season because it doesn't matter. They're very average players on a very below average team. And I know the conspiracy theorists out there think this is some great big Eastern media bias and, you know, a national entity pushing content down particular listener sorts. It's not.
Interesting things are happening.
Interesting things are interesting.
Yeah.
Non-interesting
things are
not. When the
Canucks do something interesting, we will talk about it.
Like, here's another team. Like, we're not talking about the Habs much.
Right? Or the Jets.
Yeah.
Or the Flames.
We can get into Sam Montembeau for an hour.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what?
Performance.
On the Habs. I was talking to a few of my friends yesterday who grew up in Montreal and they're still Habs fans. And they are very interested in the Habs drafting Michkov. And that'll be a team that I'll be curious to see if they see Michkov as a guy that they as an organization can be patient with.
Yeah.
Because his talent is undeniable. It's just you don't know when you're going to get him. So
personally, I don't have the patience for it. I need immediate gratification.
Yeah, but because you're a child.
Yeah, 2026 is like a long way away. And that's even the first year that he might be able to come over.
No, I know.
Like,
well, that's the risk, right?
Yeah, it's too long.
That's the risk. So the draft order and probably how it's going to play out is Chicago's going to take Bedard. Mm-hmm. Anaheim second, right?
Fantilli,
Columbus. Now, Columbus could reach on Michkov. Not reach, but Columbus could take Michkov, I suppose.
Yarmo's gone off the board. He could take a guy that wasn't even in the first round.
You never know with Yarmo. But Leo Carlson would be the consensus pick at number three. And then it's San Jose's turn. Do you think San Jose could maybe go after Michkov?
Sure. I mean, someone's
they don't have to turn things around right away in San Jose.
Someone's going to be tantalized by getting a franchise type player and having to go at five. Mm-hmm. That's where San Jose is, right?
No. San Jose's at four. Montreal's at five.
And because that's the thing. If it's a guy that would otherwise be at the top of the draft, you have to be tantalized by the prospect of getting him and not having to win the lottery to do it. It's just such an awfully long time in the future, right? And I don't know. I mean, again, I think that there's going to be probably a team in the top five. And you're right, it's not a reach.
Yeah,
but they're going to almost have to explain to their fan base. They're like, we have drafted a potentially franchise-altering player. Mm-hmm. However, you're not going to see him until 2026.
I just feel like for a team like the Habs, but maybe also a team like the Sharks, you're kind of like, especially the Habs who are going to sell tickets anyway, the Sharks might not, right? So the Sharks might be sitting there going, like, we need to up the interest in our team yesterday. Because I don't know if you saw some of the crowds that were watching Sharks games last season, but it was sparse down there. Montreal is always going to be a little bit different. So Montreal could say, hey, listen, we're a few years away anyway. So let's draft Michkov and then continue to build the team patiently. We got some young players that are going to need some NHL experience. There's no Stanley Cup expectations. There's not even playoff expectations next season for Montreal. You could even argue that another down year and another high pick could be good for the organization. Mm-hmm. So you keep doing that. And then before you know it, 2026 is here, and Michkov comes to a team that is already reloaded. So you're at, so as soon as he arrives in North America, you could say the goal is to have a playoff caliber team at that point. And then you're adding on top of all that, Michkov. Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah, it's just a long time. It's three seasons.
I know. You're impatient.
I'm not impatient. I'm not impatient. If you suck right now, it means that last year stunk. Mm-hmm. So now you're saying you got to
When do you think Lekkerimäki is going to arrive? It's going to be 3 or 4 years too.
Yeah, but he's not a franchise savior.
Yeah.
He's just a guy.
Well, that's true.
At this point, he's just a guy.
Yeah.
He could be good, but he's
not.
But
even when they drafted him, they're like, this guy's going to be here in a few years.
I think you understand that I'm just in a perpetual like cycle of, please, let's just get good again. I can't, like, especially in the context of the last 8 years.
I understand that with the Canucks, yeah.
Yeah, like, the last 8 years have not been an enjoyable ride, you know? And I guess, to your point, it may have been more enjoyable or palatable if there was a light at the end of the tunnel like a Michkov.
Right.
But there's, I mean, here, there's not that.
I just wonder if teams, like, if a bunch of teams pass on Michkov, and then you fast forward 3 years, are those teams going to be like, God, we're stupid. Look at this player. Look at this guy.
Yeah, I think there could be some.
Are we idiots?
I think there could be some retrospective regret that they didn't go and do it.
I think with that line of thinking, I think he might go in the top five. I think he might go to San Jose or Montreal. I think it's the most interesting part of the draft, where Michkov goes. And, of course, what the Canucks do. Mm-hmm. But for me, like, if you're talking draft wide, we all know that Bedard and Fantilli and Leo Carlson we don't know all that they're going to go in the top three. Bedard's going to go first. Fantilli's probably going to go second, and maybe Leo Carlson third. Mm-hmm. But we could see Michkov, anywhere from four to, I don't think he'll fall to the Canucks at 11.
No. I won't rule out anything. But I mean, we've talked to a couple different draft prospects guys on the show, including Ryan Kennedy from the Hockey News yesterday. Mm-hmm. And the general sense was that it's too much talent to fall that far.
Well, here's a question for you. Would Halford draft Michkov if he were available at 11? Let's say he falls all the way to the Canucks at 11. And
your good questions.
Your impatience. You've been kind of painted into a corner here. Would you draft him?
No, I got to answer the question.
Oh, my God.
No.
You're an idiot then. You're an idiot.
Get someone that can help you sooner.
The guy that they're going to draft at 11 is going to need years of development?
Here's the thing about
what are you going to lop off? Maybe a year of development time?
Here's the thing about development. Are you concerned at all that for 3 years, you're going to be completely hands-off in terms of the trajectory of the kid's career?
A little bit, but
it's
a judgment call, right?
Maybe more than a little bit. Well, there's my judgment.
Okay, your judgment is poor.
I like my judgment. Okay. I want to do a tennis Ask Us Anything because the French Open at Roland Garros.
Good judgment.
You don't want to do that?
No.
Okay. Colin and Tawasson wrote in, what we learned, Bianca Andreescu advanced to the third round of the French Open with a convincing win over Emma Navarro, and that was after taking out the 18th seed, Victoria Azarenka, in the first round. Could Bianca finally be back on form after years of injury, derailing what was supposed to be tennis's next big star? My answer to this is I sure hope so, because I feel like right now Canadian tennis, especially on the men's side, is kind of where you're saying like where Canadian men's golf is at. It's like there's a lot of talent and there's a lot of people waiting to break through.
Yeah.
I'm doing the gesture, break through the ceiling. That's it. But no one's done it. And in the men's side, especially.
Yeah.
Like
they're going to have to increase our rating on Sportsnet now.
That's from 22 Jump Street. We can break through the ceiling.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Keep doing it.
I feel like Felix and Chapo, we just keep waiting.
Yeah.
Waiting and waiting and waiting.
Is Felix not very good on clay? Well, because he went out.
Yeah, he went out early. He went out. And he's the number 10 player in the world.
Yeah.
And he went out in the first round. And
no, I get what you're saying about.
I'm trying to draw an analogy.
I think there's more talent among the tennis players than there are the golfers.
Sure, just based on the rankings, for
just
sure.
Just based on the rankings, yeah. And the team success that they've had.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right that they haven't been able to get over the hump.
Just
there's only been one Canadian tennis player ever. Mm-hmm. To get over the hump and win a Grand Slam event, and that's Bianca.
Right. She's got the highest ceiling, for sure. Like, on the men's side now, Chapo's got the huge, huge opportunity in front of him, right? He's got Carlo Alcaraz coming up. Like, mm-hmm. And that's the kind of moment that we've talked about in golf and in tennis, where it's like, here's your chance, here's your moment, because right. if you can...
Yeah, it's like Corey Connors, here's your chance, You're in the mix Sunday morning.
Final day majors.
Are you at the very least going to hang in there mm-hmm. and be part of the conversation when there's three holes to go?
Yeah.
And he hasn't been. And that happened at the PGA. He was out of contention to win the tournament real early. And that's why the CBS cameras were like, well, we don't have to show him again.
Yeah.
Because there's no interest in him. From the casual American sports fan. As a Canadian, you might bristle. Like, what happened to him? Well, what happened to him is he made a bunch of pars and bogeys.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to see him.
And then he got dropped off the broadcast entirely.
And sure, there were some bigger name players that had a worse score than him that were getting more camera time than him. But that's the way it is until you break through and you become a player. When Mike Weir broke through, and even before... he won the Masters. He won a few big tournaments. He got the camera time,
yeah.
right? Because the producers knew that he might be writing an interesting story. Mm-hmm. And you want to show all the chapters of the story. When you're not part of an interesting narrative on Sunday, you don't get shown much.
Right. I have one here from Mark in Van City. He also says, go Nuggets. At the end of this, I think he's talking about the Denver Nuggets, but given his text, I'm not too sure. Mark writes, ask us anything. I'm hopping on the ferry at 2 p.m. Burger, chicken fingers, none of the above. What is the wise dining option on the BC ferries? And he points out RIP to the buffet because the Pacific Buffet is closed until further notice. And I got a feeling it's never going to open again.
Right. I usually just get White Spot.
Do you like the White Spot on the ferry? I feel like it's an inferior.
It's different.
It's different. And not in a good way. I don't like it.
You don't like it?
Well, there's White Spot proper.
Right. Yeah.
And then there's, what's the name of the Triple O's?
Triple O's.
It's like, I'm at the gas station. I'd like a hamburger.
Off
right?
White
I
off
really
White
like
Spot.
Triple O's.
Off
I
White
know you
Spot.
Do. I really like Triple O's. I like Triple O's in more than the White Spot sometimes.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a great take.
Mm-hmm.
Play the horn. Play the horn.
There's one at the bottom of, I want to say, Fraser and Marine.
I know what one you're talking about.
Yeah, by the gas station. Yep. I've been there a few times.
Okay.
And
so
it's like, hey, it's me again.
First name basis.
Yeah. Hello, Jason. It's got all the other like
bacon cheddar burger again.
Want your usual? Already got it made
Mr.
for
you. Mr. Healthy, how are you?
Yeah. How often do you eat at a gas station, sir?
Oh, you're upgrading to poutine.
Yeah. So okay, but I would
I do that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would put the power rankings at like White Spot proper, Triple O's, although apparently with Jason those are interchangeable, but White Spot on the ferry is an inferior product. I'm okay saying that.
Well, there's a couple things.
You gotta
wait in
the
huge line.
Right? You gotta protect the brand.
You gotta wait in the huge line, and you can tell that the food's been sitting there a little bit. I think
here's the thing with BC ferry food. It all sucks. It's not good. None of it. Right?
No offense to the fine folks that work at BC
It's not
ferry.
Their fault. Yeah. I don't think it's the proper...
I always enjoyed a BC Ferry's hot dog. Although I haven't had one since White Spot came.
Right. I mean, that.
Do they still have the hot dog?
They have a hot dog, yes. Okay. Yeah. I think it's very much of like the.
Guy, should I be worried about my diet?
Yes.
Okay.
The fact that those are the two things.
Gas
that you
station
up.
Burgers and BC
Ferry's
hot
more
dogs.
Sodium. More sodium, Jason. That's what you need to go for.
But the food in general stinks. I did take a ferry trip recently. I forgot now you're able to consume beer whilst on the ferry. I didn't buy them myself. A buddy that I was with went gum. You have to buy food. You can't just buy a beer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but
that's fair.
Yeah. But so to answer Mark's ask us anything, don't eat.
Mike, the teacher, ask us anything. Has social media helped or hindered your enjoyment of sports? I'm not oblivious to the fact that you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, but I can't help but think back to a time when there was a certain amount of mystique around superstars and the curtain wasn't completely pulled back. Maybe I'm just an old man yelling at clouds. I kind of see both sides of the argument, though. Yeah, that's a hard one for me to answer. Has social media helped or hindered your enjoyment of sports? There are certainly times, many times, at least once a day, that I'm like, God, I hate Twitter. And I hate the conversations that are going on Twitter. It's so predictable. It's so lame. I know how this is going to play out. I know what people are going to say. I know what the counter to those people is going to say. And I know how it's going to roll out. That being said, I've got a lot of laughs out of social media watching sports. And it's just part of how I watch sports now.
From a sports perspective, like, it has been, I can't even imagine trying to consume and trying to keep, not just for the job, because I'd love all of it.
Yeah. Right?
Like, you always make fun of me for the amount of soccer that I consume, but like, I could not imagine doing it to the level that of enjoyment that I have and the way I want to do it without social media. Like, I just can't keep track of everything, but I want to.
We need social media to do our job.
No, but it's
because so many of the details come out in real time about what's going on in the game. There's replays, there's explanations of replays, you know.
There are so many people that cover their particular sports or teams really, really well, like with detailed insight and thought, and not just like spewing hot takes like Austin Matthews is going to get traded by July 1st, which is totally going to happen, but just in a way where you're like, man, like, this is a really interesting, intriguing, thoughtful person that's put an incredible amount of analysis into this,
right?
And I just at my fingertips for free. Like, I just scroll through and I'm like, oh, I just learned a lot about Scunthorpe, which I didn't even know that I needed to know, but there's someone out there that cares, right? And I remember growing up, my uncle bought me it's an anthology of the greatest sports writing of the 20th century, and it's got articles for about stuff that I would never ever consider paying more than 5 seconds of attention to. There was an article on a power lifter named Steve Mihalik, who was the sort of like Mr. Universe, crazy amount of steroids in the 70s and 80s. And it is the most unbelievable writing. And I was so consumed by powerlifting.
Like, right.
And, you know, like Arnold Schwarzenegger at the beach, Mr. Teddy Atlas kind of style stuff. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing, right? It's great.
Do you have enough attention now to actually read a full article like that?
I still do it all the time. Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
I was very fundamentally upset when long form shut down.
Right, yeah.
Long form was basically, it procured the best magazine writing in the world and then gave it to you in filters. Like, hey, there's the sports filter. You can read it.
Back to the initial question, Twitter shaping the way you watch sports.
It's been amazing. It's been a total game changer.
I'm from a different generation. So it's hard for me to think of watching sports without Twitter because it's been so long. And my wife actually got into Twitter because she's a West Coast Blue Jays fan, and that's how we met. So you're talking
about the community aspect of
it. Yeah.
So finding like-minded people. I don't like that. I don't like meeting people. But I understand that there's a large, like, hey, I've actually talk to people who are like waist deep into Canucks Twitter, and they love it because there's a camaraderie, and they are like,
they were making connections with people in Utica.
I'm not seeing
all the camaraderie on Canucks Twitter.
There is, without question. Like, they're like, I've met friends solely because we met because we had a shared affinity for the Canucks, and we connected.
We
on
both
Twitter.
Did not care for the direction of the team.
Yeah, like, hey, we both didn't like, I don't know, pick a Canuck, right?
They bonded over the lack of weaponization of cap space.
Yeah, honestly.
Now we're best of friends.
And but that is an entire component of it that I don't engage in, but I can totally appreciate.
You don't even like tweets.
No, I don't do that. That's the coward's like, or the coward's retweet, sorry. Mm. But here's the thing.
The like is the coward's retweet.
Yeah, it is. That's what it is. Yeah. Yeah, you're too cowardly to retweet it, so you just put a little heart beside it.
I've seen your tweet. I like it, but I'm not willing to share it with everyone.
I'm not willing to annoy my
followers. I'm too embarrassed to share it with people.
And like, I get, I also get that some people that are either new to the city or have to move for a variety of reasons,
yeah,
it's hard to find people that you have common interests with, right? You don't want to go on like some sort of friend website and be like, what do we have in common?
That's what Twitter is. It's a friend website.
But yeah, and you kind of like
friend
filter.
Website. Yeah. Is there a friend website?
Is there like Tinder for friends?
You should start one.
Yeah.
Is there?
Halford's,
I don't know.
Halford's friend website.
It's got to be a better name than that. But
like,
I do
want to go hang out.
Is there a friend? Is it just a friend Twitter? Tinder?
I don't know.
There should be an app for like dads to just meet up and like drink beer together. I need that.
You need that in your life?
I need that in my life.
If any dads would like to meet up with Laddie and have a beer and talk about the Blue Jays, I guess text into the show.
Or make an app.
And maybe we can set you up with someone. 1 hour to go on the Halford and Brough Show. EJ Raddick is going to join us next. Talk about the Stanley Cup Final that everyone is so excited for. I think it could be compelling, but I need to see it first, right? I need to see what the hockey is going to be like. Because I was excited for Florida and Carolina, and that kind of turned into a bit of a letdown considering how quickly the series was over. So hopefully we'll have a compelling Stanley Cup Final, which does begin tomorrow in Vegas with the Florida Panthers in town to play the Golden Knights. EJ Raddick is going to join us next. And then at 8:30, please stick around, Amar Doman, the BC Lions owner, is going to join us. Talk about what the Lions have planned for this season. Let's recap the first year of ownership for Amar Doman. What has gone well? What is he pleased with? And what are his ongoing challenges? If you've got any questions for Amar, please text them into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.